live from the List Track Recording Studio. This is Email Marketing Today. Here are your hosts, Ross, Matt, and Brent.
Welcome to episode 12 of Email Marketing Today, the List Track podcast. I'm Ross Kramer, CEO of List Track, and with me today in the studio is Matt Elliott.
Hey, Ross, how are you doing?
I am great. Now, we're trying something new today. We had such a tremendous response from the social marketing webinar that we did with Sandy Carter that we've invited her to be a part of our podcast today. So welcome, Sandy.
Thank you, Ross. It's a pleasure to be back.
You betcha. You betcha. It's great to have you here. And we also have a contingent of other IBMers from Sandy's team on the call with us today. And really, today is just a conversation with Sandy. And also, it's going to be a bit of a Q&A as well. For those of you that didn't join us for Sandy's webinar, a little bit about Sandy Carter. She's Vice President of SOA and WebSphere Marketing Strategy and Channels for IBM. She's won over 20 marketing awards, and she is the author of a very successful new book on SOA technology entitled The New Language of Marketing 2.0, How to Use Angels to Energize Your Market. So welcome, Sandy. It's great to have you here. I guess I'll open this up with, you know, since the webinar, any new insights or things that you're seeing in the social media space?
Yeah, you know, since we had chatted, we're getting a lot of interest now in how to listen in a more uniform fashion or a stronger methodology. And we've been pulling together, Ross, a couple of case studies on how we did that listening and what lessons we learned for a couple of our clients in the marketplace. So one that we had used was a project called Project Zero. And what it was is that in development of this new product, which happens to be a product for use with Web 2.0, we use some of the traditional approaches to drive requirements like focus groups and market intelligence, but we really added into it a lot of the social media. So again, doing that hybrid approach. We posted a blog, we had a forum, we got thousands of responses from our customers about what we should put in this particular product, both from our normal channels, the focus groups, but as well from the blog. In fact, a lot of great activity there. So throughout the whole development cycle, we use this social media listening. And if you think about the listening, we would post a beta code, and then we'd get feedback, and then we'd post more builds, and we'd get feedback, and we kept doing that with this iterative process based on social media listening. And the conversations have continued. It's really been great to leverage this feedback and evangelism. It's a great product for us. In fact, we just posted it out to the cloud services offered by Amazon. We have over 49 folks who have downloaded it and use it for 4,700 hours. And in fact, even the name came from some of this listening. So I found after we did this seminar, it was very interesting to find so much going on in listening and this case study so applicable and so, you know, so much in demand by folks that listened here and as well who had read the book.
You know, that's fabulous. And I think one of the reasons that many companies are jumping onto the social media wave is that it gets you a lot closer to your customers. I know I was just out at one of our customers yesterday in Philadelphia, and they had referenced the TSA site as being a great example of listening to your, you know, listening to your customer base. And I think, you know, that example, as well as, you know, others on the government sector, I was particularly impressed as an American of Obama's citizens briefing book, where he was, you know, getting and soliciting feedback from people, you know, all over the country on what they wanted this country to look, you know, look like and do. Yeah. And, you know, it's just a fabulous example. Now,
can I add one more? I thought this was interesting too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it came from my hairdresser, believe it or not. It's a small business, so I thought it would be really interesting, given the questions we got from the last time. I gave him a copy of the book, and I walked in to get my hair cut, and he said, "I'm going to give you a free haircut." I was like, wow, you know, this gentleman doesn't give away free haircuts. And I said, why? And he goes, well, after we talked last time and I read your book, he goes, I went and created a Facebook page. I created that, and I linked into the communities in this area in Westchester County and found that a lot of the college and teenage girls were talking about a certain treatment. He said, and I have that treatment. I was listening to them. I have that treatment, but I only did like 3 a month. So he said, I posted out to my Facebook page this offer for a 10% discount off this treatment. And he said, Sandy, I got 67 of these college and high school kids coming into my salon through this Facebook page.
Wow.
I listened, I heard, and I acted. So great example, right?
Small
company doing something really cool.
That's amazing.
Absolutely. And in our channel, like in the email channel, you know, our customers listen through open, read, and click activity and conversion activity. Are there some other, you know, tools on in like the social media aspect where they should be, you know, where would you focus your listening on?
Yeah, you know, we use a couple of tools. We use, obviously, a lot of the alerts from TweetDeck and from Twitter, so we can find out what's happening online. Of course, my hairdresser used some of the techniques in Facebook to look at in certain groups what were the common topics being discussed. And then, of course, we use Google Alerts. Now, all of those are a bit manual, right? And that's why we have something, you know, we work for IBM, so we have our own software called Banter, and we use that to monitor about 4.25 million social media sites and to see how the sentiment is tracking over time, although there are also a lot of other great tools out there on the market to do that.
That's fabulous. One question for you, Sandy. In your opinion, what would be the area of marketing that would get the greatest boost from adding social media elements? You know, if for anybody that's sort of listening to the podcast and you know, they haven't made that jump like your hairdresser did, you know, where do they start?
Well, one thing that my team and I have done that has added in social media, again, you know, not replacing email, adding to what we do with email, adding to what we do with a lot of traditional marketing, is to drive audience generation. In our business, Ross, we do a lot of our marketing through events, either virtual events or in-person events. And so if we could lower the cost of generating an audience to come to that event through social media ads, then it's all goodness for us. So quick hitters, we added several things in social media. We added a Twitter channel, attracting customers, driving them to the event. Now, that is not in replace of, you know, our email drive, you know, our advertising, other things that we did. But we found from our Twitter channel and our landing page that the social media add-ons generated about a 10% uplift in our registrants for this event with low to really no cost. In addition, the way that we then collaborated at the events also saved us money. So for instance, instead of having photographers on site, we asked the customers to take pictures and post them to Flickr. And we got over 750 pictures posted within 4 hours of the first event. Now, what did that do? Well, the customers were posting those on their favorite things. Customers believe other customers more than a vendor. And so it was an amazing way to drive not just energy for this event, but for the next event we did. We also used some of our wikis to post the podcasts for speakers, both education and training before they went, as well as posting them for customers afterwards, reducing our cost of training and how we educate. And then because of all the tagging we used and offers, we had less manual reporting to get event information. So we used Twitter to kind of collect some of the audience quotes and real-time sparklers and really created this whole, you know, whole drive to and whole image. So just by adding in those levers, again, you know, supplementing what we do with email and advertising, but adding those in, we found that about 73% of our events converted attendance to leads versus our normal about 52%. And then more amazing, from these alternate channels, we had about 44% of white space leads, which was much higher than for a typical roadshow. So a great example of how you could add this in pretty quickly, supplementing what you already do. And I think that's a key. You know, this morning had a conversation with one of our customers, brilliant CMO who's been doing this for a long time. He wanted to know, you know, I don't want to do just a social media campaign. I've got a lot of other things that are working. I just want to add to it and start slowly. And I think that's really a big secret here for our success.
So I'm going to ask one more question of you, Sandy, based on your last the topic there, and then open it up to some of the other IBMers that are in on the call. But are you, since ListTrack is an email marketing company, and a lot of this podcast is about email marketing, Are you using email as a catalyst to any of the social things that you're doing? Like, for example, are you saying follow us on Twitter in any of your emails?
Absolutely. We're saying follow us on Twitter. We're on our signature. We're making that social, so we're linking it into blogs or to a LinkedIn profile. We're making the emails much more active. And, in fact, a lot of our emails now are video emails. We're finding that that personal touch and having someone see a person supplementing the words has been extremely powerful as well. And then our newest venture, we just put up a set of videos on YouTube. We have a video series out there, and we're tagging, you know, words from the videos. But we're finding one of the ways that we're able to push that out is, again, using email to virally start the viewing of those videos. And so for us, it really is a hybrid approach. It's not, okay, Twitter's taking the place of email or YouTube's taking the place of an in-person event. It's really, you know, all those tools in your toolkit and dialing up and dialing back depending upon what your goal is.
So conversely, are you using the social channels to drive people into your email stream so that you can maintain that relationship as well?
Yeah, so we're actually using some of the social ways to collect email addresses and actually now as well ability to do text messaging on mobile devices, right, which is another kind of form of email, I would say. And we're using that to collect this community and then to, you know, kind of make sure that we're reaching them with what's most interesting to them, because we've got some customers who only do text, some who only look at email. And, in fact, the other day I found the first person who said, if you want to talk to me, you got to go through my blog or my Twitter. I'm not answering emails. I'm not doing text. That's the only way you're going to reach me. Kind of funny, huh?
Yeah, I'm thinking about turning that new policy on for me. Email overload. So I know that there's some IBMers on the call that wanted to you know, contribute to the conversation. So I'll open it up.
Hi, Sandy. This is Jorley Baker. Is there a set of metrics you found to be most relevant in figuring out the efficacy of social media?
Yeah, so we do a couple of things here that are really important. So first, Jorley, we measure our overall campaign. So kind of back to the premise here, we don't look at things in a separate realm. So we look at our overall campaign effectiveness and how we're doing and driving things out. In fact, we use automated dashboards with linkages into trigger elements, like an email blast, if we wanted to do an email blast based on what's happening on our automated dashboard. So, you know, we look at responses, we look at campaign analysis, you know, the traditional forms of metrics. The new metrics that we're looking at really involve a more complicated view, and we're not done here, and I know there's, you know, Forrester's doing some work with us, which is around how involved are your customers in your social media? What's the interaction like? How would you rate it? What's the intimacy? And how are you doing in influencing them to purchase? So, you know, it's kind of in experimental stages, but looking at, you know, web analytics to determine the frequency of relevant conversations, we're monitoring which conversations mention our brand on popular communities. So a community that's very authoritative gets higher points than one that's not quite as well respected. And then we're also looking at conversion of relationships. So a great story, we had a lead that came in through my blog. I have one of the top 10 blogs at IBM, and it's a blog on a technology. Had a dialogue back and forth on my blog. This customer ended up wanting to call me, and we ended up closing a major deal from that blog. Now, so that started with our involvement and interaction and then a conversion to a relationship all the way through purchase. How do you quantify that? That's what we're trying to look at, going through web analytics, looking at brand monitoring, customer service calls, surveys, some of the sentiment tracking that we're doing overall. So we're really looking at both metrics right now to try to get a good feel for, you know, where this will end up. I did a lot of great work with Google. Google's got some nice analytics and nice tooling that's coming out right now as well to help measure some of the social currency. And then I'll mention yesterday, published on the Wall Street Journal was an article that measured the value of your social currency or your social relationships. So what it did is it went through, it was based on an IBM study that we had done with McKinsey, And it said, you know, based on how many connections you have, either on Twitter or LinkedIn or Facebook, that you're more likely to be successful in closing a deal and more likely to have customers come to you. So it actually put a value on your social connectedness as well. And that's up on my blog if anybody wants to read it.
I was actually going to jump in on that and ask you a question. Mm-hmm. A lot of the social media pundits are talking in that realm in its quantity. And it sounds like some of your metrics that you're starting to look at is quality. And do you think there's going to come a point where it's no longer going to mean just how many social media connections can you make, but what the quality of those connections are?
Right. And that's where, you know, it's the sentiment of those connections, the authority of them. Are they relevant? Are they most important? And how frequent are they? And in fact, in some of the research that we had done, this is IBM with the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. You guys would really like this. They assigned even a dollar value to email interactions with your boss. And they found that those who have a stronger connection to their manager produced about $588,000 of revenue more a month over normal connections, or, you know, people who were just having average interactions. So they actually measured the authority, the quantity, and the frequency of those interactions.
Another IBM winner wants to jump in on a question.
Yes. Hi, Sandy. This is Patricia Santamaria. How do you recover from mistakes when you're using social media? And how do you take it back when it goes wrong?
It's a great question. I'm sure you haven't had that happen, right, Trish? I think we all have. I think there's several things that you can do. One is just looking, again, at some of the basic branding principles, which whether you're using social media or not, the way that you recover from a mistake can actually more positively impact your brand than had you never made the mistake to start with. So I think the first thing is actually recognizing that you made a mistake and then looking at the way you're going to handle that. Best example I know is what happened with Johnson & Johnson, one of the companies that I admire, great customers of ours. They placed a whole set of online advertising and started conversations around a new way to talk about Motrin. It was found to be very offensive to a set of mothers. In fact, you know, as we all know, the mommy bloggers are very strong. And in fact, a lot of blogs and tweets started coming out about how disturbing this was. Now, J&J did not intend to make that mistake to offend these moms who were actually the target of the ad. But the actions that they took, I thought, were very well done. You know, first, they didn't wait a long time. They immediately took action on what they had done. Within 24 hours, they had removed material that was found offensive. I guess I should say probably step zero is they determined that this was enough influencers, enough authority people that were concerned about it. So they made sure it was a group of people they respected, the mommy bloggers. Then they took actions fast, and they also issued an apology. And they did that both in a press release that went out through traditional methods. They did it on Twitter, and they did it on their blog, stating, you know, their intention had not been to offend, stated their motivation, and then apologized for the actions that were taken. For me, that was probably the best example of handling something in such a correct way that I think their brand equity actually went up because of the way they handled that particular mistake.
Yeah, you know, and we talked about this actually in just last week's episode of this podcast, is how to recover from mistakes made in an email. And we actually found sometimes with some of the evidence that we had and some of the examples that the apology emails actually got greater responses than the actual original email that went out.
Absolutely. It's all in the way that you handle that mistake, you know, both socially and not socially. And I will say, you know, the communities online are, you know, I think they're great. I love the communities because they help discipline when somebody tries to do something that's not quite right. They're very forgiving, they're understanding, because they know that everybody makes a mistake. And so as long as you handle it correctly, I think that you can recover with style and grace.
Perfect. And I know that we've got some other IBMers in on the call that have some questions as well.
Hi, Danny. This is Angus Ferraro. I have a question on objections to social media. What sort of objections have you encountered with presenting social media plans internally, and is there any tips on how to overcome those?
Yeah, this is a great question, too. In fact, this morning when we were, I was talking to one of the customers who's getting ready to start their foray into adding social media, we talked about the number one question he gets, which is mine as well, which is, does it really make a difference? What's the value of this? Can you measure it? And I think that's probably the number one objective is, can you measure it, and can you tell that it's not just for fun or frivolous, but something that's really going to add value? And the analogy we used this morning was, you know, if you remember back to the dot-com era, you know, a lot of people were coming in going, oh, it's not about profit, it's not about this. But in the end, the fundamentals made the Internet successful. And I think the same thing will happen here with social media. There's a lot of hype around it. There's a lot of, you know, myth around it. But the fundamentals of social media are here to stay. I mean, they've been around forever, right? In villages long, long ago, social aspects were critical. We just now have a different media to have those in. So I think that's number one, is figuring out your metrics. And that means to address that objection, you have to be able to show results. So a lot of times I advise people, you know, start with something you're doing already with Web 1.0. You know, everybody has a website. What could you add to that to show that you're in the Web 2.0 foyer, but you're not, you know, going ballistic around it? A couple of ads you could do. We have on our IBM.com/SOA site a bot that comes out and presents offers. She's gotten us about 5 times higher click-through rates than normal ways. You could add things like online chat where you're having a dialogue and co-creating with a customer. Easy to do, low cost, very measurable. In fact, our online chat team is the highest productive sales team at IBM. You can do some no-cost ways with Twitter, like driving people to your event. So you can show maybe with a tag or a code like we did or like Dell does, so that you can actually measure how many people saw your tweet and took action on it. So I think there's a whole lot of ways that you can get by that objection, and I think that's probably the number one. And number two is the question we just talked about. You know, people are afraid with their brand. It's very important to them. And therefore, they're afraid of making a mistake online. And the problem with that philosophy is that if they don't participate, their brand's still going to be online. So just by you making a decision not to participate doesn't mean that your partners or your customers or your critics aren't going to be out there talking about your brand and really moving through that. So, and that's where in the book, Ross, we talk a lot about lightly branded and how you can do this in a safe environment so that you can start out slow, but that you can do it in a way that protects your brand as well.
Yeah, that's perfect. And I think we've got probably time left on the podcast for one more question.
Hi, Sandy. This is Sach Takayasu. My question is, if you could hire only a single person to manage your social media, what are the kind of skills you're looking for?
Great question. So here's what I'd look for. First of all, I'd look for a person who is passionate and who lives in this world, who lives in the social media world. And the reason I do that is I think if you don't love it and you're not doing it, you know, personally and professionally, even without having that be your job title, I don't think you'll be very successful. The second thing I look for is someone who's willing to take risks and who is willing to experiment, because there's no rule books for the most part out there. Even in my book where we go through about 55 case studies, you know, it's just being shaped. It's very much emerging. And so probably something you want to do, you're not going to have a step-by-step approach to it. So you got to have a risk taker or someone who's bold and is willing to experiment. And then I'd say the final thing is someone who really listens. If you look at a lot of these strategies, if you don't listen to the marketplace and then take action, you're going to be in trouble. So you got to have, I think, all three of those attributes. And then my favorite, and you guys know because I've hired many of these, is you've got to be able to talk in the what I call the CNN snippet. You can't take, you know, a 5-page white paper to tell your story or to get across your value prop. This person would have to be able to talk and write and communicate and that CNN, you know, clicker, ticker going across the bottom, get your message across fast, quick, short, and simple.
That's perfect. Well, you know, Sandy, it has just been a pleasure to have you on the podcast today. I know it was a pleasure to have you on our webinar, which for the folks that are listening in is recorded. You can shoot out to listtrack.com, hit our resources page, and find the recorded version. For the book that we've been referencing, You can find it on Amazon.com. That book's called The New Language of Marketing 2.0. Sandy Carter and the team from IBM, thank you so much for being a part today. It's great to have you on, and we'll keep our eyes out on new developments that you guys are up to. So thanks a lot.
Thank you, Rob.